Perfect.
Well,
hey, welcome to the pod, baby.
To another episode of Bus Stuff.
Bus Stuff. Are you into bus stuff? I made an executive decision without Lucas's consent.
Yeah, and I think that I'm going to file a motion to, you know, challenge.
What should we name the podcast, though?
I think that Bus Stuff is way better than Are You Into Bus Stuff. I think that we could call the podcast The Bus Stop. I think we could call the podcast Look Both Ways. I think that's really catchy.
I go both ways, and I don't look both ways.
I just think it needs to be no more than, like, three words.
No, I mean, yeah. Yeah. Oh, I'm dying, bro. I'm dying.
Yeah. I'm sorry. What did you just come down with something this week, or?
I have just a fucking respiratory infection.
Yeah, I do too. I have essentially since I got back from Texas.
Bro, I feel like dog shit.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, okay. I mean, life goes on. Hopefully,
I've been feeling better, but my lungs are definitely still not like functioning at full capacity. I biked to the park yesterday and I got to the top of the hill and it's all uphill. It's like 2 miles uphill. And it's usually that's not a huge deal for me, but I made it to the top of the hill and I was like very winded. And I was kind of, I don't know, I could feel it for the rest of the day, which was unusual.
You know what I was thinking about the other day?
Hmm.
I was thinking about Cap Metro. And I'm thinking about, like, the efficacy of public expenditure.
Uh-oh.
Like, well, you know, it's like, I was thinking about United Healthcare, right? And it's like, well, when is it just to kill someone? You know? Not that I'm going to murder anyone at Cap Metro. I should be clear. But it's like, you know, it's this guy who's the head honcho of the insurance company. He gets capped. He probably deserved to die. No one's too upset about it. But at the same time, Cap Metro is over here pissing away like tens of millions of dollars on stuff that isn't like bus miles, bus hours, like functional service, right? And the result of that is people die. The result of that is people don't have access to economic opportunity. They don't have access to medicine. They don't have access to social relationships. They don't have access, right?
Mm-hmm.
They don't have access to mobility. And that kills people, right? So it's like these failures in public administration and in public expenditure have directly violent results on the community itself. And
yes.
I was just thinking, like, I don't know. It just gets my goat when these people have the fucking gall to sit around and suck each other's dicks and pat themselves on the back,
mm-hmm.
you know, while people suffer. Right, because of failures in public administration.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm sure there's good people in Cap Metro, as there are across.
There's like six,
you know, municipalities, you know, trying to make an impact. But the historical disinvestment in infrastructure that is people friendly and overinvestment in infrastructure that is deadly in so many ways means that, you know, those folks that are trying to push the ball in the right direction have a steep hill to go up. But I think you're right.
True.
I think you're right that the, you know, United CEO shooting is an interesting moment, sort of barometer, you know, pulse check for our country, because even the normie outlets, even the normie liberal outlets are like, ha ha. I saw a great post that was analyzing the comments on, I think it was Ben Shapiro's post, saying that, you know, it was like, the evil reactionary left wants to celebrate the death of a man. And it's like, well, yeah, and a bunch of conservative commentarians commented in the on the video, you know, essentially putting him in his place, saying like, no, Ben, like, we all agree on this one. The insurance companies are evil and we want them to die. So, like, maybe that's one of the rallying posts, you know, the places we need to center our political movement is around the insurance companies, because we do seem to universally detest them in a way that, you know, of course, I, you know, detest what has happened in terms of our urban infrastructure. You know, you put it well, I won't try to reiterate it, but does everyone feel that way? Not yet. Not yet.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm mostly pissed about the red line, right? Well, it's up to like $500 million in capital expenditure. And from an operating perspective, the government is still subsidizing each train trip to the tune of like $60 a person per trip.
That's a lot.
So if you take the train from Leander to Austin, the government might as well be giving you like $100 bill every single day, which is like a whole income. It's like,
which would be like a better use. A lot of our local governments, one of the things that they do to help people get on track financially is they buy them a car, which like is actually kind given the situation where I live, where like you need a car to get to work, right? You know, from most places. And it's just funny. It's like a feedback loop.
Yeah. No, and it's like, it's not that trains are bad. It's that when you spend the money inefficiently, it has the cascading effect of like not providing vital infrastructure to the community.
Right.
It's like, it's not that train bad. It's that opportunity cost of train overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
The opportunity cost is an overwhelming amount of bus service that is paramount to like the functionality of the system itself.
Yeah. And the red line is the train to nowhere. It's the train north, right?
Yeah. It's the train to nowhere.
And then the next one that they should have built a rail line along Riverside to the airport. Like,
yeah, strictly speaking, Quad first, and then I guess 6th Street.
Given like users' propensity to use it and Austin's draw as a tourist destination, like the airport line would generate more money.
It's just less density, less employment, and less population density.
I mean, it's pretty dense along Riverside.
It's pretty dense. It's in the top 10 of, like, transit corridors, essentially.
Yeah, but I guess what I'm saying is that, like, people along Guad would slowly begin to use it more and more, right? And a lot of people would use it as they use the bus. But I don't know. I feel like in terms of, like, creating a cultural shift, meaning that, like, everybody can get from downtown to the airport on a train and it's super convenient and fast, I feel like it would have a longer term, like, positive cultural impact.
So I guess my argument here is that, like, let's just say, you know, it's, you have a city, you have certain transit corridors, you know, you have your top 10 ridership buses, let's just say.
Mm-hmm.
You have a certain amount of capital money that you want to dedicate to building light rail or heavy rail, right? You say to yourself, well, we want to take our highest ridership routes,
mm-hmm.
and we want to convert them into light rail, because then for every vehicle mile traveled, we can spend less money.
Mm-hmm.
For every vehicle mile traveled, we can have more passengers on that vehicle. And the reason you would want to do Guad before the airport line is because you're going to see more ridership per like mile of vehicle service, and you're going to have a higher fare recovery ratio. So if you have a higher fare recovery ratio in the long term, then you can build the next project sooner, right? So the problem with the red line is it's like, we have all these bus routes. In premise, you would just take busy number one. you'd take busy number one, and you'd fucking electrify that bitch.
Yeah.
the way I do. I love to electrify that busy. no, but you'd take the first bus route, and you'd electrify it. You'd make it a light rail. And then you'd be able to build the second most important one sooner, right? Than if you had built the fifth one, then you'd have less money coming in. You'd be spending more money per person. What Austin did was take like the fucking 60th most important transit corridor and throw half a fucking $1 billion at it.
Well, it's because the rails already existed, right? It was like half of least resistance.
It was truly, I think, the path of least political resistance.
Because
right. It serves no population density, and nobody fought back.
Right.
Because it serves no population density.
Right. And that's my, like, next, I think, point is about the political difficulty of changing infrastructure, particularly on streets where cars currently operate. So where would the Guad, in your opinion, the ideal route for the Guad light rail would be from Cesar Chavez, from the lake to...
Yeah, so it starts at Runberg, comes down Lamar,
mm-hmm.
switches to Guad when it goes by UT,
mm-hmm.
switches to Congress when it gets to the Capitol, and then takes Sloco all the way out of town.
Into the
It's the 801.
Not the sunset.
If you look up the 801, it's basically that exact route, except it should go on Congress in the downtown area instead of on Guad.
Gotcha.
I don't know when we took transit off of Congress. We had a mule car there in the late 1800s. We had electric streetcar there until the electric streetcar was torn out.
Mm-hmm.
We had bus service on Congress until, I think, the 2000s.
Is there no bus service on Congress?
No, not a single bus drives on Congress.
That is bananas.
No, it's the dumbest thing, I know. Well, no, the dumbest thing is the Red Line. It's among the dumb things Cap Metro does.
So coming back to comparing your line, which is the 801, and then what's the name of the bus that takes you from the freeway? Is it or from the airport? Is it the 20?
The 20.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny. It's like this weird thing that goes from the airport to UT and then up Manor.
Uh-huh.
Into like, yeah.
But I mean, its first like route section, other than like the little loop-de-loop and like backtrack that it has to do because of how the freeways work, I feel like down that massive road, down Riverside, you could install a light rail without disrupting car traffic as much.
Yes.
And at least get to Lamar. It would be nice to be able to cross the river, but...
You're right that it's like a high... it's a corridor that serves a lot of vehicle miles currently.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be... It has suitable density. It has suitable density to light railify it. It meets the minimum qualifications. It's just not... our densest corridor.
Mm-hmm.
There's only a handful that outdo it. Guad and 6th Street, basically, mm-hmm. are two of the main ones. Like, a little fucking 3 mile, a tiny little guy, little boy light rail that just ran east-west on 6th.
Little streetcar type.
It would serve a fuck ton of people. People would take it every day.
Yeah, especially, I mean, with the building up, I mean, for better or worse, we talked about this last time, but the building up, for better or worse, on the east side.
Yeah, it's sad, man. It's really sad. I've been cycling in the city now for a decade, and it's like I haven't taken the bus in like 2 years.
Wow.
It's just so fucking useless.
Yeah. Our bus, I mean, coming to Denver, our bus system works pretty decent, but to our point from last time, Denver is one grid population everybody, except, you know, downtown where there's the grid at 45 degrees to the normal grid that, you know, went along the rails and the river that is, you know, kind of the oldest part of Denver. But yeah, I mean, my commute to work right now is, let me see, I want to get this right. My commute to work by car usually takes about 15 minutes, and it's about 5 miles. How long do you think it takes on transit, and how many vehicles do you think
5 miles?
Yeah.
It presents like a transfer and an hour and 15 minutes.
Yep, you're about right. If I catch the right bus at the right time, and then my connection comes at the right time, and I don't miss it, I can get there in about an hour.
25-minute bike ride,
and
10-minute
drive,
hour 15 on the bus.
It's like a 35-minute bike ride.
But it's like a tale as old as time. It's like, how the fuck is my fat ass faster than the bus?
Yeah, absolutely. But like the route, the fastest route, the only way to make it like a 25, 30-minute bike ride, would be to kind of go as the crow flies, and there's just no good way to go. Like it's a dangerous bike ride.
Feel
Preferably,
that.
what I would do is I would take the 7th Avenue Parkway, protected. I mean, it's not a protected bike lane, but it's a slow street. There's a huge bike lane. It's not a door lane. And then I'd cut through Cherry Creek to get to the Cherry Creek Trail. And then I would take that out of my way all the way to downtown so that I could connect to the Platte River Trail. And then I would take that all the way back
Nice.
to
The
the office.
toxic waste trail.
So it's on the south side of the city, so it's not as bad as it is all the way up there, but it does become the toxic waste trail 100% next to Suncor.
I had never been to Denver before. I rode that trail, and then I kind of like linked it to the trail that goes to Golden. And I swear to God, it was the saddest place I've ever been in my life.
It's one of the for those that don't know, who may associate Denver with like the mountains and outdoorsy yuppie cucks and Patagonia jackets, that's all somewhat true if you drive your vehicle through traffic 2 hours to the mountains. But if you're just like a normal city person and you're trying to be active and use your bicycle to get around, one of our main cycling trails goes by the Suncor Refinery, which is next to also our only slaughterhouse in Denver. It also goes right by the pet food factory. We have a large Purina factory where they take animal byproducts and process them into kibble.
Sounds good.
It is truly, it's one of the most polluted zip codes in the country. It smells up a storm like 24/7 up there. Sometimes you can hear it. I live in central East Denver. And when the wind is blowing right, you can those fumes waft into central Denver and you can smell it. And it's truly atrocious that one of our trails that they call, premier connected biking cycling trails goes right through that incredible section of industry. It's gross. It's gross.
And I guess, like, I don't know, car infrastructure that goes through that part of town, you're in a hermetically sealed box. You have air filters. So, like, driving through it isn't as, like, visceral.
Well, you're also not like exercising.
Yeah, right? You're not huffing and puffing.
And granted, I mean, that section of the trail, there's not a ton of elevation change. And so it's not like you're really huffing and puffing. I mean, you could. I mean, obviously, you can go as fast as you want, but you could bike leisurely through there. But it's disgusting. And you look at the water, the Platte River runs right through there. And, I mean, this is what Denver was. It was how Denver secured, in its early history, how it secured the regional prominence that it still holds today, was by attracting the railroad lines, because Denver is where they were successfully processing more coal, processing more oil, processing more precious metal, than in Colorado Springs, which was the original capital of Colorado. But Denver became the center of industry. It's also where they were more successful at quashing labor movements. The labor movements in the late 1800s in Colorado are fascinating. There was a huge riot in Cripple Creek, Colorado, that kind of reverberated and shook things up in Colorado Springs, and that was really when Denver, the politicians in Denver, were successfully able to break the strikes that were happening, and so more ore processing came to Denver, and shortly thereafter, the railroads decided, okay, well we're just going to route through Denver, and Denver became, essentially, I mean that was the first catalyst that helped Denver become what it is today.
Yeah, Austin, I do believe was a rail settlement. I don't actually know. I bike by the spot where the white people settled, like all the time. It's where the creek meets the river. And just, like topography doesn't change. A lot of things change in cities, but topography is not one of them. And so
In
where the
some
creek meets the
cases,
river is still downtown.
Yep. I mean, like, if you look at the history of Seattle, I mean, they did actually rebuild the topography throughout, like, most of central Seattle.
Have you, I mean, it's like Hill City. Good God.
Yeah. Yep. Well, and it, like, there was a flood early in the history, and so they, like, redid it so that it wouldn't flood.
I'm dying.
Yeah, I'm sorry, dude.
It's okay. Go on without me.
I wanted to circle back to Forgotten Bottom. Which is a phrase I find myself saying a lot.
For real.
But I just wanted to highlight, and for listeners out there, I recommend pulling this up and taking a look. But Forgotten Bottom is a section of Gray's Ferry, which is a neighborhood that has been centered in a lot of the history of gentrification and, you know, the racial dynamics in the, like, late 20th, early 21st century. You know, it was a place where they built the Tasker homes and the Greater Grays Ferry estates, which were housing projects. It was, you know, historically a working class Black and Irish neighborhood. The Irish folks were, you know, were living in the row homes, and Black folks largely were living in the Tasker homes, that were built by the Greater Grays Ferry Estates people, the, you know, sort of government developers that built the housing projects. And there were, you know, riots and beatings and shootings. And in 1997, Louis Farrakhan actually showed up and threatened to join the Black marchers who were protesting the racial violence. That kind of got shut down. But Forgotten Bottom is a part of the neighborhood that has just sort of been forgotten. It's called that because they built the freeway, which I think is it's the Schuylkill Expressway there. Is it I-95?
Yule 76.
Yeah.
Fitting for a freeway that goes through Philadelphia.
Right. But they built this freeway right through it, and I definitely encourage you to take a look at that and look at the satellite imagery. And essentially, Forgotten Bottom lost its political will, and even as all of this racial tension and these, like, violent uprisings were happening, literally just, like, three or four blocks away, Forgotten Bottom, you know, they weren't able to advocate for the things that they needed as a neighborhood, because after that, you know, the neighborhood kind of found a new way forward, and I mean, I hope someone listening can, you know, write in and tell us more about it, because I'm on my first, like, day of research on this. But FedEx moved in our century and promised to, like, hire some of the local people from Forgotten Bottom, and then didn't do that. And now finally there's been an influx of, you know, essentially real estate speculators at the individual level, moving in, buying some of these old row houses that you see next to the FedEx Ship Center in Forgotten Bottom. But it's just part of the legacy of urban renewal and freeway development that this section of neighborhood, which was a, you know, thriving part of the Grays Ferry neighborhood and was an important industrial neighborhood, was forgotten and sort of, like, left out of the history of the nearby people. It's just, like, shocking.
I mean, maybe to white people.
Well, I mean, I think it's shocking regardless. Like, I'm not saying it's surprising or that it's new or that it's unique, but I don't think that means that we should, like, accept it as normal. You know what I mean? Like, it still should shock us. Like, we need to find a way to stay emotional about it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. It seems like Austin's just kind of bending over with our freeway expansion.
Yeah, are you guys expanding 35?
Yeah, it's getting wider, thicker.
Damn. That's intense.
Yeah, it's fucked up.
It's already very wide and very thick.
You think Ben Franklin was bisexual?
Yeah, he was very slutty.
Was he certified bisexual or just certified, like, slutty and like to sleep with French women?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think that they issued certifications, but I would say he probably definitely had sex with men.
Sucking and fucking in South Philadelphia. It's me, Benny B. Benny B. Benny B. Franklin.
The other thing I wanted to talk about, just from my, like, you know, looking at the map, is enclaves.
Enclaves?
Enclaves, like municipal enclaves. So there's one, I believe, in Austin, Texas. Do you know what it is?
Do you mean like a land island?
Like, yes.
A municipality that exists within a municipality?
That is, like, yeah, Austin locked.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think the textbook case is like LA, Phoenix.
Houston has a couple of big ones. Austin has, like, one really notable one. Do you know what, like, it is?
Westlake?
No, it's Sunset Valley. Sunset Valley
yeah,
is
there's
a...
there's that one. Strictly speaking, Westlake Hills is enclosed.
Westlake Hills. Ooh, Westlake Hills is indeed
an enclave. The whole enclave problem is so indicative of, like, the mess that we're in, right? The right of people to be just say, like, we're going to stop paying taxes to public transportation.
Yeah.
Stop paying taxes to the sewers,
exactly,
to electricity. It's like that is the root of so many of our problems.
Yes. That's the primary reason I wanted to highlight it, because a lot of these places are high income areas where
always high income. Well, I mean, with maybe WeHo. I mean, WeHo was because they wanted to have their own police force and not be beat up for being gay.
Yeah. There's one, Jacinto City in Houston is more of like a middle income, lower income enclave in Houston. Westlake Hills is not quite an enclave. There's a little section of it that kind of lets itself back out towards Barton Creek and Lost Creek. Wow, Rollingwood all the way down into... That's crazy. Are you familiar with the city of Rollingwood?
Yeah, I ride my bike there sometimes.
I bet it's really
very
nice.
Close to the... It's basically Austin.
I was going to say, it's in the city center. Like, it's...
It's as close to downtown as I am, and I'm the neighborhood north of downtown.
Yeah. We've got a really famous one in Denver called Glendale. Glendale, Colorado. Mm-hmm. And Glendale's really interesting. It's got, some listeners may know about Shotgun Willie's. Do you know about Shotgun Willie's, Ben?
No.
Shotgun Willie's is arguably the most famous strip club in Colorado.
Excellent.
And it's right on, I recommend you throw Google Street View down at Colorado Boulevard and Cherry Creek North or Virginia Avenue so that you can see just how terrible the Strode situation is. And then you can see Starbuds as well as Shotgun Willie's in the background there. There's a double tree.
This is a banger strip club. This is some good architecture.
Right?
This is nice looking. I'd go in there. I'd go in there for, like, the lunch.
Hell yeah.
Dude, oh my God, there is a lunch special.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
But anyway, Glendale is a really interesting history. It's, you know, classic enclave history. There was enough, you know, local wealth and political will to avoid being incorporated by Denver. And Denver's history, or, you know, is a little bit later than a lot of our cities, but Glendale's been fascinating because it's become a stronghold for interesting conservative movements. The mayor of Glendale for a long time was the owner of Shotgun Willie's, if that, you know, tells you anything. Like, they elected the owner of a strip club as their mayor, and they founded the Tea Party. The first,
oh my God,
the first chapter of the Tea Party, the conservative movement, you know, in the aughts, in the United States, was, it started in Glendale.
Hey, one sec. Sorry, that's my roommate.
No worries.
He thought I was talking to him. it's not his fault.
No sweat. But yeah, so the Tea Party was founded in Glendale, which I think tells a story about like what these enclaves are.
So, I mean, I can speak to a little bit of like public finance law in Texas. So Cap Metro... there's so much fucked up detail about how our public transportation system is funded here in Austin. So the Texas State Transportation Code, it more or less says, like, if you have a major metro, all the main metro and all of the little municipalities around it are, like, they should pay taxes into this system.
Mm-hmm.
The Texas law is written specifically so that, like, certain parts of it only apply to Austin because they really love to fuck with Austin. But in the context that the transportation code pertains to Austin, all the municipalities that aren't Austin can simply vote out of paying taxes to Cap Metro. They can leave the Cap Metro service zone, I think, with, like, a simple majority.
Wow.
And so most of them did. Round Rock, I think all of them did. Leander's the only city in the Austin metro that's, like, still paying taxes to Cap Metro. I think Lago Vista does, Jonestown does. Pretty sure Cedar Park doesn't. Let me check.
Which is crazy because you have to go through Cedar. I mean, the easiest way to get to Leander is through Cedar Park.
Right.
So it's like, wow.
But no, so like Westlake voted out, Cedar Park voted out, Round Rock voted out, Georgetown voted out, Pflugerville voted out, BK voted out, Volente Beach voted out. And so you're left with this network that just doesn't fucking function.
Well, yeah, like, buses are for poor people, and we don't want those in our city.
Something like 30 to 50% of the population of the metro area is not paying taxes into... Okay. I shouldn't say that, because it's sales tax, right? So if you drive into the city and you buy something, you're paying taxes to the bus.
Sure. But there's a lot of HEBs in Round Rock that would be generating a ton of revenue.
Right. Revenue for... And so Denver, I don't believe, has this issue. I think the RTD is a regional... everybody pays to the RTD.
Yes. Yep.
Not certain about that because I haven't read your transportation code.
I am fairly sure that that is how it works. And
pretty sure everyone pays to the RTD, unlike us.
Yeah.
This is intentional. This is failure by design.
Yeah.
And what is the result? A catastrophic lack of transportation infrastructure. What is the result? You can't get anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. So just like, that's like a big problem. Everyone can just vote out. It's trivially easy to get fucking scared white people to vote out of the bus network. That's a huge problem. The other problem is just there's a lack of operating funding. The feds used to match spending on operating, not just CapEx.
Mm-hmm.
But now they'll buy you a bus, but they won't help you run it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's about to get way worse.
Yeah, for real, dude. Well, I mean, how can it get worse? There's zero operating spending coming from the feds. There's zero operating spending coming from the state.
Well, project-based funding you know, Project 2025 says that even the existing project-based funding that is coming from the feds to local municipalities will not be sent. Like, they're going to stop doing that. They're essentially going to try to gut the entire thing and just do, like, road maintenance projects, but no, like, transit-oriented local projects. Like, that's essentially the language.
And they're going to have the threefer. They have Senate, House, and President.
Yeah, I mean, it's the slimmest House majority, I think, maybe ever.
We just need, like, one gay Joe Manchin Republican to, like,
yeah,
be our little mole boy.
I mean, I do think that there'll be a lot of gridlock in the House, but I think that it just sets up, you know, they've been preparing the public, and they've been indicating that they are operating under the unitary executive theory. So I think that it's going to matter a little bit less. I think that we are moving into a period of probably the strongest presidency of our time. And, you know, we can speculate about whether we're sliding out of democracy or into fascism or whatever. But just, you know, with a look at history, I mean, the strongest presidents we've had were FDR, Andrew Jackson. And I think we're going to see some similar things where the president makes decisions and pushes through legislation that fundamentally changes our economic and governing systems without, you know, maybe the same institutional support that we've needed throughout this relatively tame period of...
I was going to say, what, was the slow decline of everything not good enough for them?
I guess not.
It's just harsh. It's just so fucking harsh.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's like, I don't know. We are an empire founded in, like, evil and exploitation. And somehow we've, like, decided that we need more evil and more exploitation in order to stay alive. That's what the majority of Americans have decided.
But isn't it like there can be no penance? It's like any kind of penance involves a sort of understanding of the myth of America.
Like, yeah.
You know, it's all our whole understanding of history, of society, of culture, of justice is based in genocide, right? And it's like there is a pain to acknowledging that. There is a dissonance. Mm-hmm. There is a subversion of right and wrong.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, the cultural powers that be pump stories into the system that reinforce that black and white, you know, binary view of morality. We think about superhero films, things like that. And there's a lot of good art that comes out of our country. I wouldn't, you know, argue with that, but the, you know, legacy producers of mass media definitely want us to continue to see things as good and evil, and sure, on like the long arc towards justice, but it's just horse shit because of what you said. All of this.
So, do you think MLK was wrong on that one? Let me find the quote. Because I sometimes disagree with this quote.
I don't know if I think it's a nice thing to think, and I hesitate to contradict Dr. King, but I think that it's one of those quotes that gets misapplied, or it gets applied to the speaker or writer's purpose, in that, like, oh well, the long arc of history bends toward justice, mean it, like, lets us off the hook for atrocities and inequalities that are baked into our systems. Because, oh, well, the long arc, like, it's, everything's going to be okay in the long run. Just wait. I mean, just keep fighting. And maybe that sentiment had a little bit more potent and, hopeful message and life inside of it in the 60s during the civil rights movement, when we did make a ton of progress. But now in this period, like my entire life, where nothing has changed, and I continue to see the inequities grow, it just feels hard to get behind that messaging.
Yeah, and it's like, it's all relative. It's like, if you're a black person in America, like in the South, let's say, it's like your grandpa couldn't eat at a fucking diner.
Right.
But if you're a child in Afghanistan or Syria or Lebanon or Iraq or Palestine, right, it's like hell rains from the sky. So like six cucks in Florida and New Jersey can make a fuck ton of money. It's like, I mean, some things do get better and some things do get worse. And I think the tacit acceptance of the complete destruction of everything, God and Earth itself, is perhaps not towards justice.
Yeah.
You know, not to diminish anyone's lived experience, right? But fuck, bro.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard for me to see, you know, these two conceptual ideas, history and justice. It's hard for me to see them as an arc. Like, it's more complex than that. And you're better at math than me, so maybe the, you know, arc is just a, you know, a regression or a, you know, some sort of function to describe a more complicated system. But for me, there's been progress at times in certain systems and certain civilizations, cultures, and there's been backsliding. And now we're in this sort of globally connected period of history where it all becomes maybe easier to ascribe a direct line, but the world is more complicated than that. And I think that it almost serves in the same way that the binary black and white good and evil thinking does. I think it serves to set us at ease about things that are way more complicated and way more terrible than it's comfortable to sit with.
Man. Is it appropriate to talk about gooning at work? Not
no.
That you have a job anymore. can you, I mean, would you talk to the other sales reps and be like, so, you guys goon?
No. No.
Can you talk about gooning? I think it's funny.
I mean, sure.
It's not coming.
No, but it's sex. It's a sexual act. It's sexual behavior.
Welcome to the Goon Cave. My name is Ben. Our menu is right here. We are a scratch kitchen.
No, I mean, it's like even more repressive and taboo than just talking about sex.
I've definitely been talking about gooning at work. My coworker started it. It's very funny.
Every workplace is different. Again, we can't go black and white binary on issues.
We had a customer come in the other day, and the name on his ticket was Richard Boner.
Nice.
So, yeah, Dick Boner came to the restaurant.
Yeah, no, he didn't. That's just the name that guy uses.
No, I mean, it was the
He's
name that came
guy.
Off of his credit card when we authorized the tab.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
I bet he's gooning.
It's a word that really, like, has only came into, like, straight people currency in the last few years, I feel like.
Yeah.
Because it's appropriated gay culture.
Gooning?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
What's
gay
about it?
It means what it means, right? but it was something that gay men did, and it was something that was current in gay culture, like, well before our current moment where, like, everybody's talking about it because of the internet.
Man, I'm so behind on gay culture. I just discovered drag.
Oh my god.
I just discovered brunch. I just discovered working out. And now gooning is gay. Sorry, I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
Back to the bus.
There's some good enclaves in Houston. Houston is the most fascinating development pattern because it's just so vast, and like where it comes up to, the Kingwood area and all of that. But some of these inner suburb enclaves, like the Memorial Villages, which comprise Bunker Hill Village, Hunter's Creek Village, Piney Point Village, and Spring Valley Village. And then particularly West University Place, Southside Place, and Bel Air. They're just some of the nicest looking suburbs in the city. I spent some time on Street View.
Sure.
And it's just amazing, and it like highlights how antisocial suburban developments are generally in, you know, the tax scheme that you described a few moments ago. And it's like taken to the max because it's literally like, no, like we're not a part of this human development that surrounds us entirely. We are our own thing. Fuck off. It's right.
We only bear the benefit of access to this.
Yes.
And we will contribute nothing at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It's like fundamentally like it to me, it's un-American. Like it's antisocial and it's against the, like what came out of the township governance model that like careened into the origins of American democracy. Because like those townships had to decide how to get along and there were always conflicts, but like what made the country possible and the civic development and economic development possible was cooperation.
And I mean, what made the whole exurban, the whole suburban shtick possible was building freeways through urban communities.
Yeah.
The whole suburb thing is predicated on, you know, the destruction of our urban communities. Mm-hmm. It's basically making these places unlivable and dominating the political will of Black and brown people in this country.
By literally leveling large sections of communities.
Thank you, Robert Moses. I have so little respect for people who call themselves traffic engineers.
Yeah. Yeah, we've lost touch for sure. I've been spending, last week I spent quite a bit of time in central Aurora, Colorado.
Nice.
And we are often coming back to the office, which is in central, like southwest central Denver, right around. And if you go to Aurora and then go to City Center North is what Google Maps calls the neighborhood. And I recommend dropping a little pin at like... Alameda Avenue and the freeway there next to the Harbor Freight.
You say Alameda and what?
And the freeway, 225. It's just shocking to see, like, when you drive out of here at like 5:30, 6 o'clock, and everyone is coming back home from work. There are, you know, endless lines of cars on the road in every direction. All of the gas stations have lines of cars at each pump. All of the drive-through restaurants have lines at least like 10 cars deep.
This is truly a sickening street view.
Yeah, it's a rough one. And it's just shocking to me.
I'm at this intersection. I don't see one person.
No.
I see maybe 500 cars. I don't see a single person. I see a bus stop. Mm-hmm.
And there are definitely...
I don't see anyone having a cigarette. I see a weed dispensary.
Mm-hmm. There are definitely...
I'd want to be high, too, if I lived here.
There are definitely parts of Aurora that you see a lot more people on the street, like on Colfax, You definitely see more people. But Alameda.
I mean, it sounds dumb. I mean, it's like, it's reductive to say that this is why he did it. But like, the complete lack of a community is the sort of thing that drives you to shoot up a school or a movie theater. You know what I mean? Like,
yep, it's
not having a community, not having love in your life or like people. Yeah.
Not having the opportunity to develop socially. Because we're all just animals, right? And like, it does take development, and I think we take it for granted. You know, those of us that were lucky enough to grow up in communities that had some level of connection or you know, for me, a big part of it was all of the groups that I did theater with when I was a kid and even in high school, like that did develop a community and taught me things about being social that I needed to learn. And given the state of our schooling and given the state of our city's infrastructure, everything is built against those principles.
Everything is anti-human. Public space is a punishment for leaving the house. Public space is a punishment for being poor in like 70% of this country.
I was going to say, except
if you exclude, if you exclude the fucking Philadelphia and New York, then it's like 95% of this country.
Well, no, that's not true either. Like, go to 12th Avenue and Vine Street in Denver. It's right next to Cheese.
Is it downtown?
Yeah, it's right next to Cheeseman Park. Like, you'll see people outside on the street view. I mean, it's still Car City, right? But, you know, this is, it's not a punishment to go outside here. It's really nice to go outside here.
Sorry, I'm looking for Cheeseman. One sec.
No worries. South Central Denver. It's southwest of City Park.
Yeah, it's but this urban fabric is like from the 1850s, right?
Yeah, but I'm contradicting your point that going outside is a punishment outside of Philadelphia.
But it's like, what percentage of America's housing stock was developed after 1940? Is, I guess, like the key question.
That's a really good question. Yeah, I mean, probably 60, maybe 70.
And it's like where I'm from, 100%, right? Where a lot of people in the West are from, it's 100%.
It's true.
Of the urban fabric. It's either the economic exclusivity of a suburban enclave, or it's the ghettofication of your community via like Strode's.
Mm-hmm. Via Strode's, urban renewal projects, and freeway developments. Because urban renewal went hand in hand with freeway development and, you know, described the raising of certain areas or the development of areas that had become abandoned due to those freeway developments and an abandonment of like legacy streetcar networks, et cetera, in favor of the automobile. And they built these, you know, anti-human housing projects and commercial developments that encourage people to use their cars and further extracted political will and livability from neighborhoods. It wasn't just the streets and the freeways changing that did this. It was also the intentional development of new types of building schemes.
Is there any solution to the sprawl problem that doesn't involve federal land development reform?
Probably, but it will only be applied in certain places. Like, I don't think the feds need to be involved, but it would help if they were, because then it would be applied more broadly.
It's like the whole, like, you're allowed to just buy land and destroy it thing is like, it's the central Ponzi scheme of America.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like, it drives everything else.
Yep.
It drives automobile sales. It drives economic development. It drives all that shit.
Yeah, it's the beating heart. It's the beating heart.
So it's like they could never, right?
Yep.
They won't. Maybe the brakes can be pumped a little bit by just say, like, federally banning single-family zoning. But it's like, even then, you can still buy land and destroy it just outside of the city. Just like, you can still just buy the next lot out.
Well, and you can still just buy the next lot out. And this is happening a lot in Aurora, for example. If you go out past E470, there's some developments out there. Let's see. No, let's go to Tollgate Crossing, which is at Gun Club.
I can't wait to cross the tollgate.
South Gun Club Road and Bellevue Avenue.
That's so dank, bro. Like Gun Club in Bellevue?
A lot of this is single family development. I think this one has some multifamily though. Maybe this one doesn't. But a lot of these. No, this one doesn't actually have. Which one am I thinking of? It's due north from there, past the golf courses. Murphy Creek has some multifamily. But yeah, you can buy, you know, this land out here and build a multifamily development that is served by no transit. So it is essentially creating the exact same issue as the single family suburban sprawl. Even though there's, you know, 10 families living in a building.
Right. Density's not enough. It's mixed use.
But when they sell this to governments, the idea to governments, and they sell these units to people or rent these units to people, they say walkable, livable community with access to biking trails and like all of the right language, right?
All of Austin's most dangerous neighborhoods are multifamily without any commercial development.
Yep. That's here too. Yeah.
It's like housing and no jobs.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I should probably get going. I think Annie will be home here and we're going to spend the afternoon together. She was nice. Teaching this morning, but yeah, let's keep meeting and doing this. It's good to discuss, and I hope, you know, we get some people listening at some point so that they can challenge our ideas.
Okay, about Bussy Boys for the title?
No.
Shut
the bus up. That's pretty funny.
No, the boarding door. In transit. I don't know. People are always like on the bus. That's like the name of the thing.
I like look both ways.
I don't know. Are you into bus stuff? Has definitely been in my back pocket for like 2 years at this point. I do like it.
I don't think we need to make any hard and fast decisions.
I mean, I did already publish it.
Yeah, on your website.
Yeah, but it's like an RSS feed, which means like anyone can. It's like a fully functional podcast.
Yeah, no, I'm grateful to you for that. But you could just change the text on the webpage. Like, we haven't, you know what I mean? Like, no one knows how to search for our podcast or anything. So let's keep talking about it, and let's make a decision when we record next time. Let's, like, make a hard decision. Let's come up with some more. Maybe we can use some of our recording time to just make, well, over the next week, let's make lists of names, and we can go through them and choose one. That'll be fun.
All right. Well, to the folks at home... Keep that bussy tight, and we'll catch you next time.
I like that. All right. I'm going to hit stop on my recording here, but okay. I love you, man.
I love you, bro. Take care.
All right. We'll talk soon.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.